Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
Suzanne Muchen. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch Hour, and I'm standing in for Steve Bertrand today. Steve was out, as he announced this earlier this week, for some surgery. He's doing well. He's resting. And I'm sure, Steve, if you're listening to this broadcast, what you want to know is that I'm not going to do my best because, you know, I've already had fan email just saying, you know, keep Steve out, hashtag. I think I'm just going to warm the bench for you because I think your fans want you back. So let's get started today. I know that everyone is talking about Pokemon Go, and you'd think that we shouldn't talk about it anymore, but I'd really like to. So we have Ian Schur, who's joining us now. He's the executive director of CNET. Hey, Ian.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm going to do my best. I know you want to just keep the bench warm.
I think that we need to set sort of a relatively low bar. So maybe just don't, like, sparkle quite so much.
All right. I'll do my best.
Okay. So everyone is talking about Pokemon Go, and you'd think we can't talk about it anymore. But what I love that you're bringing us today is the dark side, because everyone's raving about how it's so amazing and kids are moving around and all of that. But tell us a little bit about what's starting to go wrong. I know there was at least one thing that happened in New York.
Yeah, so there's been, you know, it's one of those things where when you bring a phone together with a car, it can only go poorly.
Right.
And that's exactly what happened in New York. We've had what might likely be the first accident involving Pokemon Go. Someone was driving around and trying to catch those Pokemon from behind the wheel. And, you know, they conveniently forget that it's a 3,000-pound thing of steel. And so they hit a tree. And it's really kind of – it's a good reminder. If you actually open the app, it reminds you to keep aware of your surroundings. Obviously, many states now have laws against texting and driving. But if you read those laws, it's really – Pokemon Go is also illegal behind the wheel.
I think we may need to get more specific. I think the laws may need to get more specific and specifically say no Pokemon Go while driving. I think that's what Americans may need.
I think that would be tough because then you'd have every new craze going on, right? It was Foursquare before, and now it's this. And, you know, it's interesting because – It brings up these larger questions about we have struggles sometimes with understanding how to integrate technology into the way we live and work. And this is one of those examples where, you know, most people, if you sat them down and said, hey, should you be completely distracted by a device while you're driving? They'd say, no, absolutely not. But then you have people like this who get behind the wheel and they think, oh, I can take a few seconds to catch a Pokemon while I'm driving. And they hit a tree. And it's just, it's sad because it's 100% preventable.
Absolutely. And now let's also talk about the other dark side of it, which is there have been some places that have actually had to say, please don't use Pokemon Go here because it's inappropriate, right?
Yeah, we've had a couple, you know, so this game, a lot of the data for the game comes out of a map that was developed actually in partnership with Google a long time ago for a different game. And the company Niantic, who worked with Nintendo, created an algorithm that found different places on a map to be able to set, you know, places for people to meet up and go. So when they created Pokemon Go, they used a lot of the same stuff. It turned out that some of those places were not ones that now make a lot of sense when you're trying to catch Pokemon. Like, for example, the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C.
Exactly.
And so there have actually been people who have walked near the Holocaust Museum and walked in looking for Pokemon. And
I mean, it's cringeworthy, right? I mean,
it's nice that you're walking around, but, you know, there's kind of this issue of respect for what happened and all of these things, right? It's just decorum. And so the museum has actually asked people not to play Pokemon Go in the building. Again, something that most of us would probably think, oh, yeah, if you asked
right, me common sense.
Playing on my phone in the middle of a Holocaust Museum, that would probably be an easy no. But, you know, when you offer this new technology or whatever, people forget common sense, and they do this. So that's happened. You've had a couple of people actually sneaking into other places they just shouldn't be, and it's just it's a problem. And so you know, Niantic and Nintendo say they're fixing this. They're actually coming up with ways to create new places for people to meet up. So odds are they're going to start also removing if there's enough kind of an outcry about it. And it'll be, you know, it's one of those kind of growing pains for a new thing.
Absolutely. And you do wonder if any publicity is good publicity at this point. I mean, even these stories, which are truly cringeworthy and seem so crazy and common sense. Look, you and I are still talking about it in spite of the fact that Pokemon Go is really, it has some downside to it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how big the downsides are. I think if you're smart and you have fun in a safe and, you know, kind of good way, and you follow the rules, it's a great game, right? It gets a lot of people together. I don't know if you walked around in Chicago, but here in San Francisco and in New York, there are many people who meet up on the street and play, and they have a lot of fun with it. And there are a few downside things that have happened like this. There have been a couple of people who have used these waypoints for people to get mugged. So there are, you know, it's just have some common sense, right? Don't get stuck too far into your phone when you're out in the real world, too. And that's the bottom line of it.
And Ian, what's your prediction here? Do you think this is going to just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger? Or is this going to be sort of a very steep climb, you know, climb up and then a crash?
You know, we've written on CNET about this very issue. And part of what we really look at is, there are examples where the stuff has gone just bananas and caught orbit and not stopped. And those are games like Clash of Clans, which you probably saw ads for during television and the Super Bowl. There's Candy Crush, which is two words that almost everybody knows.
I hate when people invite me to play. It actually makes me angry.
Right?
Yeah,
but there was a period where it was kind of cool, and so that's the thing, is that these are multi-billion-dollar games, and so can Pokemon hit that level? It's still an open question. Definitely, the one thing that's been special about this, it's the fastest growing game that we've ever seen. But the thing about it is that it also plays to this kind of millennial, you know, nostalgia for this series.
Absolutely.
And this franchise that started 20 years ago.
Right.
And so it's done a really good job of doing two things. It has that nostalgia, but it also has that kind of gee whiz new technology to it, right? A lot of people haven't interacted with what's called augmented reality, where you have an image of the real world and you overlay computers on top of it. Like in this case, you look around your room and suddenly there's a Pokemon.
It feels to me like it's almost a gateway drug. But Ian, thank you so much. We've got Ian Schur from CNET. I like that we could have a little bit of cynicism around it.
Definitely. It's important to look at the good and the bad.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Ian. It's Suzanne Mushin, and it's the Wintrust Business Lunch Hour. Steve Bertrand is out, but for those of you who know, he was out due to some surgery. He's doing well. He's resting, and I'm sure he's listening just, you know, because I think he's really a big fan of mine, almost like a stalker. But I feel like the theme today is that I'm taking everything that people think is so great and turning it into negative news. You just heard me crash on Pokemon Go. And now we have Bill Geiger of Geiger Wealth Management in. And Bill, you know, the markets have moved to all-time highs again this week, which I think people would think was good news.
Right.
But I think you're going to tell me that this might make some people nervous.
Well, it makes me nervous. I tend to worry a lot. It is kind of counterintuitive, but if our clientele is primarily in the late 50s, early 60s, retirement planning, and when you get to that stage of life, you probably have more in your portfolio than you've ever had. You're within smelling distance of retirement. And to have a market at an all-time high, what a better time to start pulling in the reins a little bit, start protecting what you have, so you don't go through another 40 or 50% loss like 2008. If you have that kind of loss, late 50s, early 60s,
it's hard to come back.
Your retirement
is
not going to be what you thought it was going to be.
And so how do people have that kind of discipline? I mean, do people naturally have it, or does somebody like you have to come in and really do some tough love?
You know, the almost the latter. The conventional wisdom is let's just grow our portfolio at any cost. And when the market's been going up for a while, you tend to forget about risk. You tend to forget about 2008.
You get comfortable.
And it's at those times when you're really pulling all the stops out for growth that you can have some big losses. This is probably the best time possible to sit down and really understand the amount of risk that you have in your portfolio, learn how to protect what you have, and by the way, start creating some income that you're going to need in retirement. An all-time high is a whole lot better place to have this conversation than an all-time low.
Right, and you'll probably make better decisions because you're not making them out of fear.
Sure, you're not panicking.
Right.
And you've got some time to think it through. And basically, you ask yourself the question, am I doing the right things at this stage of my life? And it's different than when you're in your 30s. You're in your 30s, you have a big loss. You've got 30 years to make it up again.
Right.
You're late 50s, early 60s. You don't have 30 years.
Right.
So your portfolio really should be oriented differently.
So I'm in my mid-40s. I guess maybe late 40s.
I don't know.
We can call it what it is. But you're saying 50s and 60s. But wouldn't you want to start earlier than that?
You do. But it's really critical.
Okay.
Late 50s, early 60s. You're in your mid 40s.
I guess late 40s. We should be honest.
You got an extra 10 years to maybe come back and move ahead. You're in your late 50s.
Yeah.
And you have a big loss there. You're going to work a lot longer, or you're going to live a lot smaller in your retirement.
So what is a question that you ask people that kind of stops them in their tracks and makes them think harder about the need to plan?
Well, I ask them one thing is, where are you going to get the income from to live when you retire? And folks never really think about that a lot. They kind of have this idea, well, I'll just grow my money into a big pile and I'll pick at it.
Right.
And that doesn't work. When you're in retirement, you need a whole bunch of sustainable income. You want income that's going to last you to the grave, that you don't have to worry about what happened in the market today, whether I go on a cruise or a vacation or whatever next week.
And how does someone calculate a dollar amount? Because I think that would stop me in my tracks if I knew I needed X number of dollars in order to retire.
Well, you know, you need more dollars the longer you wait to do this.
Yep.
The earlier on that you sit down and start preparing for income for your retirement, the more powerful that strategy can be.
And you have more choices than you're saying.
You have more choices and you have time on your side.
Right.
There's a whole bunch of strategies and financial vehicles that time is really an ally. And if you're late 50s and you got 6, 7, 8 years until retirement, you can do some powerful things.
Right. I think this is something people don't talk to their employees enough about.
Yeah, they never do.
They
have a neat website and they say, go here and learn about 401ks.
Right.
And it really doesn't help them. You know, Suzanne, as we're sitting here talking, one of the major, I feel like our mission in life is to get the word out to people in their late 50s, early 60s, to really understand where they're at. And in light of that, I know you're going to talk about this in a moment. For the next 5 callers who call in that meet our requirements, and you're going to talk about this, I'm going to sit down with the folks personally.
Wow.
Help them put together a retirement plan, an income plan for their retirement, and really help them make sure they're doing the right things.
Okay, but I feel like I'm now at a disadvantage because I can't call you because I'm live on the air. Can we have like a 6th caller?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Bill Geiger of Geiger Wealth Management, thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure.
If you're in your late 50s to early 60s, this could be a confusing time for retirement. If you're wondering how the election, the global events, and the current economy might affect your retirement, you're not alone. Bill Geiger from Geiger Wealth Management understands and has a tremendous opportunity for you today that he just mentioned, but let's talk about it again. Bill is going to sit down with you personally. And like, this is his company, right? Bill Geiger. He's not going to push you off to someone else. He's going to sit down with you personally to do a full-blown retirement analysis, complimentary for the next 5 callers. I'm going to be the 6th, but I'm on the air. Next 5 callers who have at least $500,000 saved for their retirement. Here's the number, If you're driving, don't grab a pen, but if you're elsewhere, please do. 800-681-2498. And Bill can translate the complex retirement process into easy to understand steps, including a retirement income plan. So call Geiger Wealth Management right now. 800-681-2498. Again, 800-681-2498. Again, just because, you know, you're distracted, focus. Last time, 800-681-2498. Hi, it's Suzanne Muchen, and it's the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. I'm standing in for Steve Bertrand. I know Steve is listening, and Steve, I know you're nervous because I'm doing so well today. But, you know, rumor has it that it still is going to be the Steve Bertrand show. I think that's what's going to happen, but we should certainly find out. So this is what I want to talk about right now because it's a topic near and dear to my heart. So Rebecca Shalaton, who's the founder of an unbelievably fantastic new company, I met a couple of different times as she's an entrepreneur here in Chicago. And what she's doing is truly going to revolutionize moms' lives. And Rebecca, you're here to talk to us about it. Welcome.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Great. So tell me where you got the inspiration. First of all, what is your company?
So my company is called PACT, and we help make school lunch and camp lunch really easy. We give parents a way to go online and order their lunches, and we deliver those healthy and fun lunches directly to families' homes so that they can do lunch carefree.
So truly, I just sign up. I go online. It's PACT apostrophe D, right?
Yep. So the website is eatpacked, EATPAKD.com. And you can also find us on Instagram and Facebook.
So I go on and I assume I set up an account. And I now have my kids' lunches delivered to me. And I hand it to them.
Yep, exactly. So you can still be involved in the process. And actually, importantly, you can let us know if you have dietary preferences, if one of your kids prefers to eat cucumbers, but the other one doesn't. And then you can set it and forget it. Or if you want your kid to still be involved, they can actually sit with you and build themselves a custom lunch. And then it'll arrive directly to your door.
So what's amazing to me about this is moms are always saying, and women in general, but mothers in particular are always talking about their time and that it's just not, everything feels either rushed or they're making hard choices all the time. Do I take my kids to school or do I pick them up after school? Because it's not always possible to do everything. So are you finding that the women who are using your app are really feeling like this saves them time?
Absolutely. We hear all the time that packing lunch is the bane of our moms' existences. And this really gives them the choice to get some of that time back and do something special for themselves or sit with their kids in the morning and have cereal together or really do whatever they want with that extra 15, 20 minutes a day.
And don't you think that it's not right? You talk about the 15, 20 minutes a day. This is my experience. It really isn't just about putting a sandwich together and throwing an apple in the bag. You've got to have the groceries at home. You have to have actually, you know, coordinated what the kid wants the next day. I always found that the annoying thing was if I didn't have individual bags of things, I had to put them in my own plastic. Like, it's a process. And so if I really could just say, sure, give me what my kids want, and why wouldn't I do that? I mean, this just, why hasn't anyone come up with this before? I'm serious.
I don't know, but we're excited to be the first ones on the market to do it. And we've spent, you know, the last 6 months really working with moms and with our families to figure out what does the service need to look like and what can we do to be the best company and the best partner for our moms in making this service possible.
And what do you think kids' experience of it is? Because, I mean, I remember when I was growing up that kids just trade their lunch stuff. That's what you do, right? And for me, my mom was the kind of mom that truly made her own yogurt in the house, and my lunch was on wheat bread and carrots. No, it wasn't amazing. It sucked as a kid. So I would just go, and my friend Judy Miner always had Pringles and, you know, the stuff that I want, and we'd just trade. So what do you think the kids are getting out of this?
So we call that lunch envy, this whole idea of trading pieces of the lunch. And we've actually built our lunches so they can do that. They can take them apart, trade it. We want to be the cool lunch service and the cool thing for the kids. Really what we're giving the child are two things. First, they can be an individual. each member, each child can pick what they want and it arrives for them. In that sense, it's really a validation for the kid of you can be picky. It's okay. We can give that to you. And second, they can actually have ownership in it. They can sit and say, you know what, Mom, I don't want that today. I'm going to pick my own lunch. And they can actually go online and build it for themselves. We've seen kids spending 30 minutes.
I was going to say, do you picture the mom and the child sitting? And I don't know why I'm saying mom. I'm sure there are plenty of dads who pack the lunch.
Yep.
Although I'm smiling as I say that because I actually don't think there are that many dads. Steve would be mad if I said that. He doesn't like when I make these kind of generalizations. But let's be honest, it's mom packing lunch.
We have seen a lot of moms. We have a couple of dads who also have said, this is perfect. I'm the lunch packer. So we're definitely for them, but we have a ton of moms who use us.
And tell me about the packaging, because is this throwaway? How does the stuff come to me?
So it comes like a Blue Apron might come. So it arrives on your doorstep, and you have the week's lunch there, so you don't have to go back. You don't have to think about it more than once. And it's all recyclable. So it's recyclable plastic. So your kid can actually use the school recycling program. And then with our packaging, we're actually setting up a way for you to send it back to us so that we can recycle it or reuse it if it's still
dirty. Would I send it back dirty?
The packaging that it arrives in, so like the FedEx box.
Okay, because yeah. I was going to say, I mean, that's the other hassle, too, is I actually don't want their lunch to come back.
Right, and that's something we've heard over and over, is that I have enough Tupperware.
Right.
And I'm losing tops and bottoms as it is.
Yes.
So it's recyclable, knowing that at schools, that's part of a positive reinforcement for the kids, too.
Right.
They're using that program and learning those
and
behaviors.
Is this a subscription? Do I need to commit, or can I do it just a day at a time?
So you can do lunches right now at a day at a time. And in the fall, we're going to be rolling out a weekly subscription so that you truly can set it and forget it. And you can have a chef selection and be worry-free for lunch.
I'm just so pained that you have come on the scene. Just as I have aged out, my youngest is 15, I've aged out of being the mom packing lunch for the first time in like 20-something years. But Rebecca Shalaton packed, eat packed, P-A-C, but no E, right?
P-A-K-D, yes.
P-A-K-D.
So EATPAKD.com. Yep.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a minute. Welcome back. It's Suzanne Muchen. I'm in for Steve Bertrand. You can follow me on Twitter at Big Payoff Radio. You can listen to my podcast. You know, I told Steve that when he was out, he had one job to do, which was to listen to my podcast end to end. And download them on iTunes. You can get them on WGN Plus. Steve always tries to tell you guys that he listens to them, but I happen to know he doesn't. So when he comes back, we're going to do a big quiz from it. So we're talking today about food. You just heard from Rebecca Shalaton of Pact, which I have to say, had I had that service available to me as a mom, I definitely would have used that. I mean, it just seems that so much time is spent on things that truly don't matter in the end. Just get the kids some healthy lunch. Whether or not you put the smiley face on their bag, does that really matter? But I also do wonder if there's going to be any shaming around. Like, I didn't pack my kids a bag of lunch and I ordered it online. I certainly hope not, because I think that whatever we can do to support moms is the thing we have to do. So in keeping with our food theme, we're going to keep going and just, you know, I haven't eaten today, but rumor has it we're going to have some food in the studio. So we have Enoch Shully, who is the owner of Bin 36. He's in the studio, and I have to say, I've been to events at Bin 36, right? It's a fabulous space, but you guys are moving, is that right?
That's right. First, I'd like to thank you for having me here, and I'd like to thank the listeners for listening to me. Thank you.
Absolutely. So yeah. Tell us where you're moving from and where you're going to.
So over the years, we've been at 161, in River North, and we moved to 161 North Jefferson. We've been there for a while. So that address is almost stuck in my head now.
Right.
We're at 339 North Dearborn for a long time, at least I'll say about 14 years.
Right, that's what I remember.
And we moved to Jefferson. As everybody knows, West Loop is
really booming. It's hot.
It's the place to be.
I have to tell you that I worked for a long time for the president of Harpo Entertainment, and our offices were based there. That neighborhood has changed so much, it's shocking. There used to only be like Vivo or like Sushi Wabi.
Right.
Now it is the hot spot. Is that why you guys decided to move?
Right. Well, there was a combination of factors. Being in River North for a long time, I always joke, people say that we are almost like the grandfather of wine bars in Chicago, which is really funny.
True.
We've been around for so long. We knew after some time that at some stage we're going to have to move away once our lease come to renewal. And looking in West Loop and what was going on there, I knew immediately that that's where we wanted to be. We wanted to mix ourselves with the new kids, the old kids, and we being the grandfather coming in and try to be cool.
I feel like you shouldn't say that on the air. I think we need to keep your brand. Let's take that off.
You know what? Going there and trying to almost reinvent ourselves.
Yes,
everyone
exactly.
said, well, Bean 36 has been here for a long time. We've been there 20 times. What are they going to offer? And then people come to us and they get shocked.
Right.
How good Bean 36 is.
And it's not just wine.
It's not just wine. We have dinner, we have brunch, we have lunch. We open 5 days a week, and it's been great. It's been amazing. The one thing that I would like to emphasize is that in Chicago, once you're around for so long, people sort of lose interest.
Yes.
They want to go to the new place.
True, the new place.
Yes, they want to see this. They want, and rightly so. But for us going there, and for instance, I had a young couple that came and they said they had their rehearsal dinner for their wedding at Bean 36 in 2001.
Right.
And
right.
they haven't been since 2005. They thought that we'd close and you sort of understand because
right.
there's so many places to see.
But you're not rebranding. Am I right that Joseph Essex did your brand early on? Is that right, Joseph and Nancy Essex?
Yes.
Early on. But you're not rebranding.
No,
you're still Bean 36.
We're still Bean 36. The Bean 36 that people have always known.
Okay.
But obviously we continue modernizing. We continue revamping our product and bring in new things and make things exciting. And we make sure that people, when they come, they actually have an experience. So the reason why I've also been around for so long because we have a very consistent product.
Yes. So tell us, did you actually bring food today?
Oh, I brought you plenty of food.
What did you bring? So it smells very good, and I'm really, really hungry.
You know, the one thing that I always say to people, I don't want to be known for one item on the menu. You know, you go to some restaurant, they say, oh, my God, these people make really good chicken.
Yeah.
And we're going to go there because their fried chicken is good. Chicken wings is good. We want it to be known for Bean 36 and what we do, you know, our wine flights, you know, Bean 36 wines, which I'm involved in making.
You guys are amazing at the wine flight.
The food that I brought in, I brought you guys Brussels sprouts, which everyone raves about Brussels sprouts.
Isn't it amazing how Brussels sprouts have become like the trendy food?
Believe in me. My mom used to make Brussels sprouts and
steam them, and they were awful, right?
And they were salty. Oof. And we used to feed them to our dog, Money.
Under the table?
Under the table.
Can I tell you something? I once got in trouble for that.
Yeah.
Mom didn't like that.
Right.
It was insulting.
Yeah.
How are these made?
This one, different canola oil. A little bit of cheese, Parmesan. We use a little capers to garnish them with.
Okay.
So when they come out, people say, oh, were this baked? No, they are not. We're just different.
Are they crispy?
They are very crispy. Mm. Very, very crispy. So when you have them, you have this combination of cheese and caper sauce.
Can
that
you tell
have
I'm hungry?
Well.
I can't even.
Yes.
I'm tempted to just cut you off so we can end the show and go back in.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's try and dig in.
Okay, what else did you bring?
I brought in the salmon. King salmon from Alaska, came with a little bit of English peas as well. Yeah. So,
Look, I'm so happy to be standing in on a day where Bean 36 is bringing in food. I can't tell you.
You know what? I didn't have lunch. I'm gonna go and try this with you.
Okay.
I was waiting for this moment.
Perfect. Well,
no breakfast, no lunch. I came hungry.
You know, the only thing standing between me and the food and you and the food is a quick break. But we're gonna have to take it. But Enoch Shelley, Bean 36, you're moving. Say the address so people know.
161 North Jefferson Street. We are right at the corner of Lake or Randolph and Jefferson. So find us there.
Hotspot. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Can't wait to eat. We're going to take a quick break.
Indeed. Very good.